Because
Yeah,
why?
music's player.
Okay. Creation. We're holding Parshas Bereishis. We're holding by the sixth day. Man is created. He's created from the holiest earth, the earth of the Holy of Holies. God gives him the ability to speak. God blows into him a neshama. What is that neshama? So the neshama is the source of life. For years, almost since man was created, people have been trying to figure out what is life. Right? It's known that they used to try to take a person when he was about to die and put him in a closed casket. Maybe that'll keep life in him. And close the room, close the doors, do all kinds of things, put pillows over him.
Freezing
What's going
him.
to keep life in him? So life is the neshama. Neshama is the life that's in us. We were created as people who have a neshama that comes from heaven, that's our life, and our bodies that come from earth. And that combination makes man. And man lives with a constant struggle where his body pulls him down to the mundane things, and his neshama keeps questing for going up. That's why there are those who are of the opinion that all of Sefer Yonah is a mashal. Sefer Yonah is not about a prophet called Yonah ben Amittai, but rather it's about the dove Yonah, which represents the neshama, that is sent down to this world and has to put up with the trials and tribulations of living down here when it constantly seeks to go back up there and to uplift man. There's a constant struggle between the neshama and the guf. And that's man. And man is given the bechira chofshis, free choice to choose between what's he going to follow. God creates man, and we said that man is blessed and given the commandment to conquer the land. Man is put to sleep. And when he awakens, God has performed an amputation, surgery, taken out a rib, taken off his tail, sliced them in half. Whatever God did, we have woman standing there. And why did God put man to sleep? Because if man would have been awake and seen her created from a tail or from a rib, he would be disgusted with her. So God put man to sleep, and that way, when he woke up, he saw a beautiful woman before him. According to some opinions, she was the most beautiful woman in the world.
She's
And
the only woman in the world.
oh, I was once dating a girl. I didn't know what to do with myself. So a friend of mine said, "Well, if you were Adam and she was Chava, wouldn't you marry her?" So I said, "Yeah, but there are other girls around. She isn't Chava." And anyways, our sages tell us that Adam had marital relations with every animal on the planet, and he didn't feel like it was right. So he turned to God and he said, "It's not right. Every animal has a pair, and none of these animals are my pair." So God put him to sleep, and when he awoke, there was Chava, and when he and Chava married, then he felt, "That's right. That's the completion of me." So I told him, if I would have gone through every animal, and then I'd meet her, so then yeah, compared to every animal, she's probably okay. Which is not for me.
That was a nice
Is
thing
that
to
a
say.
literal interpretation or is that a metaphorical
No, I didn't think
interpretation?
that's a logical thing. You tell a man he's dating a girl and he's not sure if it's for him or not. So you say, "Well, if she was the only girl around, would you marry her?" You can't choose a wife that way.
Is that meant to be taken literally, that he actually had relations with animals, or?
It's a good question. So he said the whole idea of man before the chet is that literally. Did man really exist and live and go in Gan Eden, and was there a snake? So he said that the Malbim in the beginning of Mishlei says that that's all a mashal. It doesn't mean literally happened. Who knows? I wasn't there. I don't know. Maybe I was, but I don't remember. So Adam falls asleep and he awakens and there's Chava. Chazal tell us that when God created Chava, he built her. What does it mean he built her? He gave her a special shape. That a woman is built different than a man. Man is straight, going straight down. A woman is built specially that she's wider on bottom and thin on top, like a storage house, so that her body can accept a baby. And another understanding says that what it means that God built her was that God started braiding her hair. God brought Malachim to decorate Chava, and they built a chuppah. And when Adam awoke, he saw this chuppah, and then Chava was brought before him all decorated, and the Malachim started dancing and playing music, and we had our first wedding. Why did God do that? To teach us that, Mitzvah, one day you'll be a big rabbi. One day you'll be a big professor. One day you'll be a millionaire. And your cousin, your second cousin, someone who you know, your neighbor is going to come to you and say, you know, I just got engaged, I need your help to help me get prepared for the wedding. And you'll think to yourself, I make $2 million an hour. I'm going to take off hours from my time to help this guy. I'm the biggest, the chief rabbi of Europe. And now that he's coming to me, okay, he needs help, I'll get someone else to help me. Where do I have time? No. God himself came and braided Chava's hair and set her up and brought Malachim to deal with preparing the preparations of a chuppah, of getting Adam married to a beautiful wife. To teach us that the greatest person shouldn't think, why am I going to help him? Who's he? Doesn't work that way. Because you're you and he's who's he, because he's a nobody, that's why you should take care of him and help him have a nice chasana. Don't think, well, what am I going to do? Chazal tell us that there was a great Amora who used to take, they used to dance with, today they do all kinds of shtick at wedding, right? So in their time they used to take hadassim, like we have in Lulav, hadassim. They used to take long branches of hadassim and dance between them. I don't remember who it was. I don't remember which Amora. So the Gemara says that this is what the guys used to do. And there was one Amora who, whenever there was a wedding, he'd take the hadass branch and he'd dance and wiggle around in front of the chasen kal. And everyone would say, him? He's such a big rabbi. This is what he's doing. He's making the chasen kal happy with this. So when he died, a fire came down from heaven, the shape of a hadass, right near his coffin. And that was to show the people that he wasn't mistaken. No, it's an honor to dance before a chasen and kala, even if it means that a person isn't going to wear his frak exactly the right way and he isn't doing it in the most respectable manner. I was amazed once. I was at a wedding, and there was one of the big dayanim of Yerushalayim at the wedding. And it was a kid who was a yasom. And this dayan started running in the dancing. He was the one keeping the circle running quickly. You know, there's always the guy who's pulling everyone along. So it was this guy with his long coat and his hat. And I said to myself, look at this. In all the world, wherever you go, you have a judge, chief justice. So the thing he's most careful about is his honor. He's in a public place. He's at a wedding. So he's going to make sure he's looking his best. And here we have one of our chief judges. And what's he doing? His focus was, he called the guys and he said, what is this? Why am I pulling you? This is a yasom. You have a special mitzvah to make him happy. Why isn't everyone dancing their strongest? Come on. He was getting everyone going. That's what the Torah teaches us. That to make a chasen happy, to help a chasen have a beautiful chasana, Hashem says, I went down and I did it for Adam and Chava, and every person is supposed to learn from that to help his friends have a beautiful chasana. Adam sees Chava for the first time, and he gives a generic name, like he did for every animal. He gives Chava a generic name. This is called Isha. Why? Because she comes from Ish. So she's an Isha. She's taken from him. And we have the great decree, Al Ken Yazov Isha Saviv Vesimo. Man leaves his father and mother. V'dovak b'ishto, he clings to his wife. V'ayu levasar echad, they are for one flesh. Together they unite, they have a child. That meat, that child, that pound of flesh is the extension, that's the unification of the couple. Adam and Chava were naked. They weren't ashamed. And the Nachash, we said, was a snake which had legs, which had a hump. The Nachash was the most cunning animal. What's the first day that Adam encounters? The first day when Adam is created, the first day he encounters, Friday afternoon, Shabbos. Let's say a person is wandering in the desert. And he loses track. What day is it today? So there are two opinions in the Gemara as to what should he do. One opinion says he should be like Adam Arishon. Just like Adam when he was created. What was the first day he encountered? Shabbos. So the first day he notices, hey, I don't know what day it is today. He should say, well, just like Adam, maybe this is Shabbos. So he says, this is Shabbos. He makes Kiddush today. And every other day, he has to do whatever work he has to do to sustain himself, but he doesn't treat it like Shabbos. He doesn't do Kiddush. The other opinion, which is the opinion we Paskin like, says no. The week begins with Sunday, creation. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And on the seventh day, he makes Kiddush. That's how we Paskin. Halachically, if a person loses track of the days, so he counts 7 days and then he makes Kiddush. Every knows, day except for Shabbos.
But he knows at least 3 days or something that he didn't do Shabbos. So.
If he's confident that he knows these days aren't Shabbos, so then he doesn't have to worry about those days.
He realizes he loses count after like 3 days. He knows he didn't do Shabbos in the last 3 days. He's going to wait 4 more days or is he going to wait?
It's a good question. I don't know. It would make sense what you're saying, that if he knows the last 3 days were in Shabbos, he should only count 4 days. But I'm not sure.
Not that he didn't know or doesn't know the last 3 days were Shabbos or not. That the last 3 days he didn't bless the Shabbos. So.
Oh. I don't know. I don't know. Before Adam is created, we have 7 days of creation, and on the last day, God creates Shabbos and blesses Shabbos. And Adam is going to encounter Shabbos. What was the great blessing of Shabbos? So the great blessing of Shabbos is threefold. One aspect is that a person could say to himself, you know, every day I barely make ends meet. Comes Friday, I have to spend so much money for Shabbos. Not only am I not working on Shabbos, Shabbos costs a lot of money. To buy all the meat and the wine every day of the week. I don't drink wine. I don't eat meat. On Shabbos, I have to buy 2 loaves of bread for every meal. I have to have lechem mishneh. I have to have 2 candles. I have to have wine for Kiddush at night, wine for Kiddush by day, wine for Kiddush by Avdallah. It's expensive. So a guy could approach Shabbos and be worried about it. Chazal tell us that on Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year, up in heavens, they decree how much money a person is going to make. But when it comes to Shabbos, they don't decree how much money he'll make for Shabbos, for the expenses of Shabbos. The expenses of Shabbos, the expenses of Yom Tov, the expenses of buying a Rebbe for his child to learn Torah, that in heaven they don't decide. They say, let's see him. Does he spend a lot of money every week on Shabbos? So we'll give him a lot of money to make up for it. If on the average week he doesn't spend, he only spends this amount of money, so we'll give him that amount of money. That's a separate account. There's the amount of money a person's going to make, and then there's a separate account for Shabbos and Yom Tov. That is not decreed on Rosh Hashanah. That depends on what a person, he himself, how much he spends. So that's one blessing that Shabbos got. The second blessing that Shabbos got is a special flavor in the food. The Gemara tells us that Rebbe had, when he was a child, so his mother circumcised him. And the Romans had decreed no child should be circumcised. And they wanted to bring her to the high court. And on the way, she went by a Gentile family. And she begged the woman, let's exchange kids. So they exchanged kids. And she took this non-Jewish baby. And that baby was uncircumcised. And when they came to court, they took off his diaper. And they said, oh, he's uncircumcised. So they let her off the hook. On her way back, she stopped by that woman. She gave her her baby back. She gave her baby back. They didn't exchange. And they were forever thankful. And those two babies grew up. One was Rebbe. The other one was Antoninus. And Antoninus became the emperor, and they were very, very good friends. And Antoninus used to come to Rebbe to learn Torah. So Antoninus one time came, and Rebbe gave him cold food. It was Shabbos. Couldn't heat up the food. So he gave him cold food, and Antoninus gobbled it down and said, boy, what delicious food. Sometime later he came, and Rebbe gave him freshly cooked food, hot. Antoninus said, you know, this isn't as good as what you gave me that time. So he said, well, I was lacking one spice. So Antoninus said, you know that my castle is open to you. You could have sent to my castle and gotten any spice you needed. Why'd you leave this spice out? So Rebbe said, this spice I can't get from your castle. This spice is called Shabbos. And Shabbos is a special spice in the food. That's a special blessing, that the food of Shabbos has a special taste. If a person keeps Shabbos correctly, then the food that is made for Shabbos will have a special taste. And the Gemara brings other stories like this, that a king once asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, why is it that the food they bake for Shabbos can be smelt all around? The neighbor could smell, each neighbor could smell what the other neighbor is making. It has a special smell, and all week long it doesn't. So he told him, that's a special spice called Shabbos. So he tried making it, and he said, I did on Shabbos, it didn't work. So he said, yeah, that's right, you don't keep Shabbos, it's not going to work. It's a special blessing for those who keep Shabbos. There's a special taste in the food. So even though the food, we don't make fresh food on Shabbos, we don't eat fresh food on Shabbos, but the food still has a special blessing. That's another blessing that the day of Shabbos received. And the third blessing, we discussed that there was a special light created in the beginning of time. And then God said this light is going to be used improperly by the Rishayim. So God hid that light, and he left a little bit of that light left over, and that light is the Neshama Yisera we get on Shabbos, right? We say, Nishmas kol chai tevarecha shimcha on Shabbos. We get a special Neshama on Shabbos. That's one understanding. Another understanding says that the Neshama Yisera is simply that if I tell you today, Friday, or on Tuesday, sit down and eat. Don't do work. Eat, enjoy yourself. Have 3 meals. Drink wine. eat two loaves of bread. You'll do this maybe 1 week and be happy with it. By the next week, you say, come on, I don't have time for this. I'm not enjoying this. People can't have too much vacation. It's unhealthy. Shabbos, here we have a break once a week. We don't answer phones. We don't do anything. We sit down, we rest, we enjoy the family. We eat, we drink, we pray, and we never get tired of it. That's a special blessing called Neshama Yisera. Rashi explains that the idea of Neshama Yisera is simply the idea that we don't get tired of Shabbos. That we come to Shabbos and we're not saying, gee, when's Matzah Shabbos? I can't stand this anymore. I got to get back to work. No. We can enjoy Shabbos. That's in Neshama Yisera. But the other understanding is what we said beforehand, that that's part of that heavenly light that's still around, and that's the third blessing of Shabbos. Adam and Chava were naked. They had marital relations. The Nachash saw this, and he saw this tremendously beautiful woman, and he wanted her for herself. So he figured, I'll get her to sin, I'll get her husband to sin, he'll die, I'll marry her, things will be all right. What was this Nachash? So Chazal tells the Nachash was the shape of a camel. He had a hump, and he walked around like camel, he had feet, and he was supposed to be the leader of the animals. He was given extra understanding and cunningness, to extra cunning in order to be able to rule the world, and he was supposed to be man's servant. Every man was supposed to have a nachash or two, or the Medrash says he was supposed to have them as his servants. They were supposed to do all the dirty work. They were supposed to do the work, and man was supposed to learn Torah. And the nachash wanted the woman for himself. Chazal tells that on the Nachash's head, the Satan was riding. So the Nachash represents what the Yetzer Hara is in this world. But notice that until they sin, all of the Yetzer Hara is external. They have a commandment, don't eat from the Yetzer Das. They have the Nachash trying to entice them, but it's all external. Inside, they're whole. Man is created with a Yetzer Hara that's external. What are they going to do? They're going to eat from the Eitz Hadas. They're going to take from that forbidden fruit, which is either a fig, or it's wine, what? Or it's grapes, or it's wheat. They're going to eat from that Eitz Hadas, and then they take the Yetzer Hara and they internalize it. And from that moment on, inside we don't know what's right and wrong. Notice how sometimes you look at something and you say, I want to do what's right, but what's right? What am I supposed to do now? And we don't know. What's good and bad have become unclear ever since we ate from the Eitz Hadas. We were supposed to eat from the Eitz Hadas later on, but we ate it too early. If Adam would have waited a few more hours, God would have told him, now you should eat from the Eitz Hadas. But Adam didn't wait. So the Nachash comes to the woman and he tells her, really? Did God tell you two not to eat from all the fruits in Gan Eden? And the woman said, no, we're allowed to eat from everything. What's his point here? His point is to start talking to her. If he speaks to her, he'll get her in conversation, he'll see where she messes up, and then he'll catch her. And this is a general rule. We try not to enter conversations which could be damaging to our spiritual health. And that's why if a person is whole in his belief, if a person has come to terms with things, then it's not a good idea to start discussing, well, what does Judaism say about this and about that? All kinds of philosophical questions. How does this work with the Torah? If you have the question, okay, so we'll deal with it. But if you don't have the question, then people shouldn't be looking to get into trouble, because you won't. It's not always easy to find the answer on hand, and then that could weaken a person tremendously. If a person has a question, we have to deal with it. That's why certain questions, even though we have open session, guys can ask whatever they want, but certain questions I tell you, if you asked it, I got to answer it. But ideally, we're not looking to raise questions. Whatever questions we have to deal with, and we have to get a basic, correct understanding of the tenets of Jewish belief. So the Nachash brings the woman into conversation, and the woman tells him, we're not allowed to eat from the fruit, and we're not allowed to touch it. Because if we do, we're going to die. Our sages tell us that this is similar to a man who comes home, and he tells his wife, everything I have you could touch, but I have this box in the corner, just don't touch it. Just don't touch that box. What's going to happen? God built into women more so than men, an intrinsic curiosity. They're always going to be curious. And that's why you read in Aesop's Fables, you'll see the recurring theme is that the woman is curious and she does something and something goes wrong. And this is a recurring theme in life. You can't, if you expect your wives not to be curious about what you do, then that's not a wife. Marry a boy. Can't marry a girl and expect her to not be curious.
But you didn't say that.
Didn't mean marry a boy, but when you marry a girl, you have to be prepared for the elements of female behavior. And Chava is the same way. Chazal tells her, this man comes home and tells his wife, don't touch that box. And she's going to think to herself, what does he have in that box? Is he hiding another wife? Is he hiding some jewels he doesn't want me to have? Is he hiding some money that he doesn't want me to see? Ultimately, she's going to open that box, and inside there's a serpent that bites her. Adam told Chava, everything you could eat, don't eat from the fruit of the Eitz Hadas. Did he tell her not to touch it? Did she also hear the commandment of God not to eat from the fruit? That we have to, that there's room for interpretation. She said, don't eat it and don't touch it. The Nachash told her, look, nothing's happening to me. And according to one opinion in the Medrash, he shoved her against the tree. When she fell against the tree, he said, you see, nothing happened. Just like when you touch it, nothing will happen. So too, when you eat it, nothing will happen. From here, Chazal tell us that when we try to distance ourselves from sin, we always have to remember, what did God say? And what's the extension of that? By Adam telling Chava, don't eat it and don't touch it, when she touched it and saw nothing happen, she said, gee, I guess I could eat it too. And that was the Nachash's trick. Once he did this, he told her, look, God really knows that if you eat from this, you'll become smart, you'll be like him. And he doesn't want you to be like him. And you'll be a god. The Nachash was the first one to say Lashon Hara. He came and said, you know, God really doesn't like you. If he liked it, God really doesn't want you to eat from this. He doesn't want you to be like him. That's why when we discuss Lashon Hara, we always discuss the Nachash. The Nachash, we say, is going to take us to task about Lashon Hara in the world to come. People are going to say to the Nachash, why do you bite people? What do you gain from it? Other animals at least eat them. They have food. You don't even eat them. What do you bite people? In Yishacha Nachash below Lachash, why do you bite? You don't even hiss. And the Nachash will say, Ve'eni tron nebal alashon. You with your tongue. You bite people all the time. You say bad things about them behind their back or in front of them. You do damage to them. And what do you gain from it? Nothing. So the Nachash is going to bite us back. He's going to say, well, you're no better than I am. And that's the truth. Chazal tell us, though, that it's a very, very difficult Yetzer Hara not to say Lashon Hara. I don't know if there's a person that doesn't say Lashon Hara. Chazal say that everyone's going to get caught on that. Either this way or that way. So it's a problem. What do we do about it? I was sitting at a table. Someone started saying something bad about someone else. What could you do? So I happened to be a relative of mine. So I told him, look, if we'd sit here and eat chazir, we'd transgress one law. If we sit here and continue this discussion, we're doing 6 lavim. We could be up to 14 mitzvos that we're over. By eating chazir, by eating pork, you do 1 sin. By saying Lashon Hara, you do 6, 7, 14. The Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, shows how a person could transgress a lot by doing it. And we don't appreciate it. We say, Talmud Torah keneged kula. We say, by learning Torah, it's like all the mitzvos don't come up to Lima Torah. That's the greatest mitzvah, learning Torah. The Yerushalmi brings the counter of that. Says, what's the greatest Avera that all the Averas don't come close to it? Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, that people fall on, and when they mess up on it, it's worse than anything else. There's a famous story of the chassid who came to his Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, I spoke Lashon Hara about this person. I don't know what to do. How can I fix what I've done? So the Rebbe told him, go to the market in the late afternoon as dusk settles in, take a pillow, open it up, and let all the feathers out. And then collect them, bring them all into the bag, and then you'll have repented. So said, gee, that's easy. Went to the marketplace, opened the pillow, let all the feathers out, and then he started collecting after. And as he tried to collect, this one was kicked that way, and the wind blew that one that way, and he started running after the feathers, one after another. He came back to the Rebbe, and he says, look, I got it a third full, but I couldn't get the rest. They were blown everywhere and kicked everywhere. The Rebbe said, that's Lashon Hara. When you speak, you say something, it goes on and on and on and on. You don't have control. You can spend your whole life trying to repent for it, and you should, but that's the problem. So Lashon Hara is something that every person has to work on, and the first person to mess up on it was the Nachash, the snake. Chava eats from the Yitzhadas. She sees that this is a special fruit, and she suddenly feels something wrong. Her teeth feel bad. She feels totally different. She has understanding, and she sees the angel of death coming towards her. She says, Adam's going to be without me. He'll marry another woman. Chazal tell us, Eina isha miskana la beyerech haverto. Achashverosh came to Mordechai and said, Mordechai, I married this beautiful girl, and I want to know what family she's from. Now, we know that she was Mordechai's niece. So he says, Mordechai, tell me, give me advice. How can I get her to tell me her secret? I want to know where she's from. So Mordechai tells him, Eina isha miskana la beyerech haverto. A woman, the thing she's most jealous of is another woman. So here's what you do. Start another pageant. Make weave like you're going to take a second wife, and then she'll be jealous, and tell her, you want me to stop this pageant? Well, tell me, where are you from? Now, Mordechai's playing both sides of the coin, right? Mordechai really is constantly telling Esther, don't give in. Chazal tells us that Ahasuerus would sit at a meal. Mordechai was standing behind him, and Esther was sitting next to him. And Ahasuerus would turn to Esther and say, Esther, tell me, what family are you from? And Mordechai would stand behind him. He would signal her, don't tell him. So at the same time, he's giving Ahasuerus the best advice, and at the same time, he's giving Esther all the boost, don't give in. But Chazal tells that's the rule. The thing a woman's most jealous of is another woman. A husband's giving his love to someone else. So the worst thing that could happen, Chava thinks, is he's going to marry someone else. That can't happen. So she runs to Adam and says, come, have some of this fruit. And if he has it, then worst comes to worst, we'll die together. Adam eats from the fruit and says, what'd you give me? He sees that things go wrong. They take fig leaves, they make themselves belts, and they hear God, and they hide. They hide in the tree. And God calls out to Adam and he says, Ayeka. And Adam says, I've heard your voice and I was scared because I am naked. So the simple understanding is, he came to understanding of what it means to be naked. He understood that that's something to be embarrassed about. But Chazal tell us that we live in this world and a healthy person doesn't want to accept it from other people. A healthy person wants to be self-sufficient. He doesn't want to live all the time from handouts, from people doing him favors. What about from God? So a healthy person should also not want handouts from God. There's a concept in Kabbalah and Rav Nachman. There's a concept called Nama de Kisufa, bread of embarrassment. When I eat and God gives me bread from heaven and I didn't do anything to deserve it, so I'm embarrassed. What did I do? What did I do to deserve this?
Ramchal says the same.
Okay. So how do we overcome that? God says, you don't have to be embarrassed. I'll give you mitzvos. I'll give you commandments. You do what I've told you to do, and that way you'll feel like you deserve what you're getting. Like, so to speak, we've done something for God. We haven't done anything for him, but God says this is how you earn your keep. You make a blessing before you eat the food. Adam had one mitzvah. He had one thing he was doing in this world that gave him a right to live in this world. He didn't live up to it. Now he was embarrassed. He's naked. I don't even have that one mitzvah. So God asks him, have you eaten from the fruit? Hamin ha'etz. Hamin ha'etz. Hamin are the letters of Haman. Haman's already signified here. And Adam says, she did it. Adam was ungrateful. He says, it's her fault. It's the woman you gave me. If you wouldn't have given her, I wouldn't have sinned. And that was part of Adam's sin. That even after he sinned, he said, you gave her to me, and that's why I sinned. God asked the woman, what'd you do? And the woman says, the Nachash caused it. God doesn't ask the Nachash, why'd you do it? Because the Nachash would have a good answer. The Nachash would say, who's boss here, me or you? You told them not to eat from the fruit. I told them yet to eat from the fruit. Who should they have listened to? Not to me. It's not my fault. And that would have been a good claim. So God doesn't ask the Nachash. Because when a person causes other people to sin, so he's always going to find a way to get out. So we don't even ask him. He gets punished right away. his feet get cut off. He's no longer chief of the animals. He's no longer king of the forest. And there's hatred placed between him and the woman and her offspring. The woman is cursed. What is she cursed with? She's cursed with the blood of the period. She's cursed with pregnancy being painful. Before this sin, Chazal tells a woman would go to sleep and wake up and she'd have two children next to her.
Did she already have children, though?
From the Midrash, it seems that she did. She already had Cain and Hevel and possibly their twin sisters. And the woman is cursed, Ve'elishech tshukaseich. You'll always be longing for your husband. The woman was given a tendency to be tovat belev. Husband comes home and he says, I'm hungry. Could we have supper? So Chazal tells us that's not there. It's for a husband to walk in through the door and say, I'm hungry, what's for supper? But men have a tendency to say what they want. And one of their greatest claims against women is, just tell me what you want from me. And women don't. So that's built in. That's part of this tendency that God gave them. That their heart yearns for things, and with their mouth they don't speak it out. They say things in a more roundabout fashion. If a wife, I always tell guys the story, the couple I was right next to, they walked out of a hall, and there was a bus stop right up a path. And the wife asks her husband, do you want to go that way to the bus stop or around there? It was like this long path where they could go all around to get to the bus path, to the bus stop. So obviously she wanted to go for a walk with him. And he looked at her and he said, well, this is straight. Why shouldn't we go this way? So he missed it. She wanted him to come out and say, yeah, I'd love to go for a walk with you and go around. So why didn't she ask that? Because God built this tendency in women, and this is part of what's going on here, that their heart yearns for things, but with their mouth they don't ask it explicitly. So a tip for everyone that's going to get married, don't expect it to be differently. That's God-given. V'huyim shalbach. He'll rule over you. What does that mean? So it seems that in the beginning of creation, there was total equality between man and woman. And at this point, the division of roles changed. And there are aspects where the husband is responsible for the smooth running of the home, more so than the wife, even though the wife runs the home. If anyone thinks he's running the home, he doesn't know what's going on. The wife is really the one running the home. But the husband is responsible for the things that go on there. Obviously, he has to maintain a good relationship and do it well. In Judaism, we find that when a person is given responsibility, it's considered a weight. It's not a privilege. Okay, you're king, great, I'm king. But what does that mean? It means that I'm responsible for everyone. Chizkiyo was king, so he ate dry bread and a small amount of water. He didn't say, I'm king, so I could have the greatest feasts in the world. He said, I'm king, so I have to send my policemen around and check that the Jewish people are keeping the Torah properly and keep the society moral and make sure people aren't worshiping idols. And how could I live up to this? And he'd daven and cry, and it was a responsibility. He didn't succeed ultimately. They tricked him. They used to make double doors, where when you put the doors together, they'd form an idol. And when you opened them, you couldn't tell there was an idol there. So when his policemen would walk in and check if there were idols in there, they'd just open the doors. He didn't see any idol there. The policemen would walk out, they'd close the doors, and the idol was back together again. So he didn't have that great success. Chazal tell us that he was successful. He got a lot of kids learning. He built a lot of yeshivas. But the people still were able to get around him. So when a husband is given the responsibility for the home, that's responsibility. It's not, oh, great, you're my wife. Clean the floors, wash the dishes, do whatever I want. No, it's a responsibility for the home to look the way it should. And man, what is man's curse? Because you listen to your wife. So that's a rule. No. Chazal tell us there are those men whose wives lead them to Gan Eden, and there are those men whose wives lead them to Gehenna. So we always have to know when to listen to them and when not to listen to them. It's a tough call. Again, open Aesop's Fables and see how many stories are there about a wife pestering her husband and he finally gives in. Open the Tanakh and you see Shimshon, the great Shimshon. Who brought him down? Delilah, his wife. You open up the Gemara, you'll also see stories where the wives brought the husbands down. And you'll see stories where the wives brought the husbands up. But in the beginning of the Torah, we have this. Huh? Believe me, the wives could bring us up. They see a lot more than we do. Seriously, they were given Bina Yisera, extra understanding, much more than we have. But you got to know when to listen to them. So God says, being that you listened to the woman and you ate from the fruit I told you not to, Aruroha Adomo Bavurecha. The land is cursed because you. Why is the land cursed? God told the land, give forth trees of fruit, where the trees have taste like the fruit. God wanted the land to give forth trees where you could eat the branches and the leaves and they had the same flavor. And the land said, gee, God didn't tell me how many trees should be this way. So what the land did was it gave forth one tree, the esrog tree. Take a Yemenite esrog, the leaves taste like the esrog. And that tree, the leaves and the tree have the same flavor as the fruit. And every other tree, it didn't live up to what God wanted. So God said, when man is punished, the land was punished with him. And now the land gave forth thorns, and it was more difficult to harvest the land and make food. You're going to die. You're made of dirt, and you'll return to dirt. And the curses end. Adam calls his wife Chava. We discussed this before. And God gives them special clothing. These special clothing, we're going to see, were passed down from generation to generation. They were clothing that God made that had a miraculous effect on the world. No animal could harm you when you were with those clothing on. The animals would bow down to you. The animals were subservient to man with those clothing. And these special clothing were passed on from generation to generation till Noah, till Yaakov Avinu. Those were the special clothing that Esav had. Adam is kicked out of Gan Eden so that he won't eat from the fruit of life, from the tree of life. Maybe that's the Torah, whatever that is. Adam and Chava live together. They have Cain. Again, they live together. They have Hevel. Cain had one twin sister, and Hevel had two twin sisters. Yeah?
I mishear you. Did you just say that the tree of life was the Torah?
Possibly. We say it's Eitz Chaim, and the Torah is also called Eitz Chaim Hilamachzikim Ba.
And then the tree of knowledge was just like, were the two trees really close? I mean, there must be a connection.
Who knows? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot written on this, but all this is Kabbalistic stuff. I don't know. I don't know what Eitz Chaim is. I don't know what Eitz Das is. I don't know what Gan Eden is.
Do you know what Tohu and Bohu are?
No, I don't know what Tohu and Bohu are. I don't know. Okay, so Cain sees his brother, and his brother got two girls, and he got only one. So he's jealous. It's not so good. They both bring an offering, and Cain takes the bad fruits, the rotten fruits, the stuff that isn't so good. And Hevel takes the best animals, and they bring it. So obviously, God gives a sign that Hevel's offering was accepted, and Cain's wasn't. Now, Hevel was a very fine person. He was supposed to be the continuation of the chosen offspring of mankind. And Cain wasn't so great. And that's why Cain, when he sees that his offering isn't accepted, God tells him, he says, what are you upset about? Do better, and I'll accept it. And if you don't, then your sin is waiting for you in the world to come. You're going to pay for it. So Cain doesn't really do better. Instead, they go out to the field, and Cain starts talking to Hevel, and he starts a fight with him, and he brings all kinds of excuses, all kinds of midrashim, what he did to get him into a fight. And when he feels like he's justified because of their fight, he pounces on Hevel and bangs him up till he kills him. God asks Cain, where's Hevel? And Cain says, I don't know. Am I responsible for my brother? Do I have to watch over him? And God tells him, look, how many people did you kill? You didn't only kill your brother. Today we understand it better. Think about it. Oh, this whole world comes from who? From Noah, from one man. If there would have been two men, then the world could have been double. Right? So when Hevel was killed, the whole world, the equivalent of the whole world was killed. God says all the bloods of all the generations were killed. And that's why we say that if a person saves someone, then it's considered like he saved the olam umlo. It's like he saved the whole world. What does that mean? Why is it like he saved the whole world? Because it is the whole world. The whole world started from one man. There's a story of Binyamin and Tzadik. He was in charge of the tzedakah. And there were tough years when there was famine and there was no rain. And people kept coming to him for tzedakah. And he gave and he gave and he gave until finally he had no money. And a woman came into his office. This is in the Gemara. The time of the Gemara. A woman came into his office and she said, could you give me something? And he said, I don't got anything. And she started holding her stomach. She could hardly stand. And he said, look, I'm sorry. The pushka's empty. I got nothing to give. And she said, you know how many days me and my orphan sons, we've had nothing to eat? And so he took from his own money, and obviously he didn't have a lot of it, and he gave her to eat. And when it came time for him to pass away, up in heaven, they said, look, he saved, how many worlds did he save? He didn't save people, he saved worlds. And his life was extended. He was given many more years to live. Why? Because when he gave them money that was the base sustenance, they didn't have what to live from, that was considered like he saved the world. And when Cain over here kills Hevel, he didn't kill one person, he killed that one person and everything that was supposed to come from him. That's why when Moshe Rabbeinu is about to kill the Mitzri, Chazal tell us, he first looked and God gave him the vision to see who all the offsprings from that Mitzri would be, and he saw that there wasn't one of them that was worth living. So he said, okay, if this person deserves to be killed and all his offsprings deserve to be killed, then I'm willing to kill him. And that's why we discussed once that all of Ammon and Moab, these two nations, were supposed to be wiped out. They were bothering the Jewish people, and we didn't wipe them out. Why? Because from Moab was supposed to come one girl who would ultimately be the mother of David HaMelech. Even the worst families, you don't know who's going to come out of them, right? If you were told about a woman who was retarded, and her sister was deaf, and her other sibling was completely mute and a non-functional human being, what would you say? She has a baby, she should have an abortion. Well, that mother is the mother of Mozart. So Mozart came from that. That's the famous example they always give in claims against abortion. How do you know what kind of baby she'll have? A woman like that was the mother of Mozart. So, okay. In Judaism, we say every human being is a whole world. It's not just one person. So Cain kills Hevel, and God says, all the blood of all the generations, they're all yelling out to me. And now you are cursed. The land won't accept you. You don't have permission to live in one place. You're going to constantly have to be a wandering person. Cain says, I can't handle this. And you're not letting me be in heaven. You're not letting me be in earth. Is my sin so terrible that no one could have me? The earth, the heavens, you're not letting me be here, and you don't want to see me. No one wants to see me. What's going to be? Anyone who sees me is going to kill me. And God tells him, okay, I'll give you a special sign on your forehead. Whoever kills Cain is going to pay the price 7 generations. Ultimately, Cain's great-great-great-grandson killed him. Cain leaves. Cain has a child. What's that child called? What name does he give him? Chanoch. Think about the significance of the name. Okay.
What is the significance?
Think about it. Chanoch, Chinoch. What Cain felt he was lacking, what he should have known, what he shouldn't have known.
What does it mean?
Chanoch is probably from the term chinoch, education. Lamech takes two wives. We discussed the two wives and the idea of two wives and the idea of having one wife for pleasure and one wife for kids. And the people start distancing themselves from God. Mankind starts thinking God is so high, so distant. How we serve him? We'll serve emissaries. We'll serve the stars who serve gods. We'll serve the angels who serve gods. We'll serve the hours who serve God. And ultimately, one generation, the next generation, ultimately it leads to idol worship. And idol worship, the Rambam tells us, is always a prelude to Avodah Zarah, to Gilui Arayos. God tells people, stick to your wives. Don't take other people's wives. We have a natural tendency to be polygamous. And just like we want everything else that we don't own, we want women we don't have a right to either. So one of the Shem Mitzvahs Menoach is V'davak B'ishto. A person's supposed to stick with his own wife. He's not supposed to take someone else's wife. Person that even a non-Jew is commanded on that one. So if there's a God, then I have to live up to what he expects of me. Can't have his wife. Well, I want his wife, and I could find a way of getting away with it. So then the easiest way to do that, oh, there is no God. If there is no God, then I don't have to live up to that law, and I can do whatever I want. Usually, the tendency to not believe is because we want to be free. Let me do what I want. And one of the greatest urges, like Freud said, that drives men is the urge to have marital relations. So the world begins by distancing God and ultimately worshiping idols. And then the next step is obviously adulterous relationships. So the world's on a going downhill. God sends them a prophet. The prophet comes and says, hey, this isn't the way God wants you to live. This isn't written in the Torah. Again, this you could see in Seder Adoros. He brings this down. Mesushelach comes. Says, do tshuva. This isn't the way to live. Mesushelach had a special sword. He was buried with that sword. That's how it's called Mesushelach. Shelach is a sword. Mesushelach is Mes v'shelach. He died with the sword. Mesushelach comes and tells the people you got to do tshuva. And he starts teaching them the ways of Hashem. How did he know it? He was a Navi. That's one of the things I told a friend of mine once who came with claims from the codes of Hammurabi. We know that laws of the Torah were given beforehand. The Medrash said that thousands of years ago. Over 1,000 years ago the Medrash was written that says that Hashem sent a Navi before Noah, the time of Mesushelach, to teach them the ways of Hashem. Lemech is going out hunting. He has a son named Tuval Kain. Lemech is blind. And his son guides him. Son tells him, Dad, lift the bow, lower the bow, shoot, shoot! And they hunt together. So one day they're hunting and they see something wild in the bushes. And his son tells him, higher, Dad, lower, Dad, got it, shoot! They shoot. Son runs into the bushes and he sees it's great-great-great-grandpa. It's Kain. We just killed Kain. Comes back and he tells his father, Dad, got good news and bad news. What's the good news? You hit. What's the bad news? Well, that was Kain. That was the great-great-grandpa. That was Kain? Oops. Lemech claps his hands in sorrow. When he claps his hands, he claps it on his son's head and kills him. Oh. Comes back home. His two wives, Ada and Sila. One was the wife we had kids from. The other one was the wife that was kept just for beauty, to enjoy her. He comes to them, he tells them, I got bad news and bad news. I just killed the great-great-grandpa and the son too. So they say, out! We don't want to have anything to do with you. What are we having kids with you for? We don't want to have anything. So he says, what do you mean you're my wives? You can't do this to me. So you see already from the beginning of time, who ruled the house? As much as the man is supposed to run the house, they said no, no can do. So they take him to court. Who are they going to go to court to? Let's go to the great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. We'll go to Adam. They come to Adam. They say, Adam, Lemech tells his claim, and the wife tells their claim.
He killed your son.
Now, Adam says, you know
his
what? He made a mistake, but he was blind. He didn't see. So go back, live with him. So they tell Adam, wait a second, Adam. It's been 130 years since you were kicked out of Gan Eden, since Cain and Hevel, that whole story happened. 130 years you haven't been with your wife. What are you telling us to go back with him? So Adam says, you're right. I'll go back to my wife, you go back to your husband. And then Adam goes back to his wife, and he has the next son called Shais. Shais comes from the word Shas, which means in Aramaic place. Hashem gave me another son instead of Hevel. And Shais is again created in the godly fashion like Hevel was. He's going to be the continuation of the humanity, the continuation of people the way they should be, like Adam. Just one second. Those 130 years that Adam wasn't with his wife, so Chazal tell us, we know that a person is forbidden to emit sperm for nothing. When it's with his wife, okay. But anything other than that is forbidden. So Adam also, he lived up to things that the Torah wanted us to do. But if a person isn't going to be married, then any normal human being is going to have times when he's not going to be able to control himself. He's during his sleep, some sperm is going to come out. A person is warned not to think unclean thoughts during the day, and that way ensure himself that that won't happen at night. A person is warned to sleep on his side and not on his stomach or his back, because if he sleeps on his stomach or his back, then there's a higher likelihood that it'll happen. But at the end of the day, every normal human being is going to have times that it happens. So Chazal tells us that every time that it happened to Adam, Adam lived 130 years without his wife. Every time that it happened to him, different shadim and ruchos were created. Different all kinds of evil spirits were created from Adam. Because he wasn't with a wife. Every person is supposed to be married, and he wasn't. Yeah?
We know for a fact that Chet was born 130 years after, or he was born at the same time. Like, they're parallel stories or one sequential stories?
Well, the Torah presents the story of Lemech, and then it says right afterwards, Vayeda Adam Odet Ishto. So it seems to be one after the other. That after the whole story of Lemech, Adam was with his wife.
It didn't, but we just, like, we didn't just go into the story of Lemech to see where the descendants of Cain went to and then ended, and then we can continue with the real story, like a sidetrack?
Could be, but the Torah also says, Vayechi Adam Shloshim Umat Shana Vayol Bidmuto Kitzalmo. It says he was 130 years old. So it seems like if day number one was in Gan Eden, and on that day he had Cain and Hevel, that's the way the Torah seems to present it. And everything happened then, so then the fact that Torah tells he was 130 years old when he had Chet seems to indicate that...
He was also born at 20?
Who?
Adam.
Cain and Hevel.
Adam.
Okay, the question is, does it mean he was born at 20, or does it mean he was born with the size and shape of a 20-year-old man? When Adam was created, I think what Chazal meant was that he wasn't created as a baby. Adam was created as a man at the age of 20. So Adam remarries his wife. He has another child, Shet. And then Adam gets to see that book that shows us how mankind is going to evolve and who are going to be the leaders. We see that the Torah tells us that people lived a long, long time in these early generations. So one understanding says, yeah, they lived hundreds of years. And that was because they lived a healthier life. They were not supposed to kill animals in order to eat meat. They were mainly vegetarians. So they were healthier people, and they lived a long life. That's one understanding. Another understanding says, well, God created man perfect. He's going to live 1,000 years. He sees that in the book of Toldos Adam, in the book that he sees of the leaders of the world, he sees that the great leader, King David, is supposed to die within the first year that he's born. So he says, God, you know what? Take 70 years off my 1,000 years, give it to Adam, and I'll live 930. So he lives 930. But Adam was created by God. So he's supposed to live 1,000 years. Now, as the generations go on, it wears off. So slowly but surely, it went down until finally God said, up to 120. That's going to be the average lifespan. And the third understanding says that they counted years differently in this time. And that's why they reached such high numbers. The way they calculated years was by months, or there are different explanations, but some say that it doesn't mean literally they lived this many years, even though the Pesukim say they lived hundreds of years. There is a Medrash that says the reason God let them live such long lives was because they had to master nature. In order to conquer nature, they had to live long lives to follow the cycles of the stars, to analyze the way plants grow. To have a deep understanding of nature, they had to have time to analyze nature. And that's why the first generations were given extra long lives.
Should that be one of our goals also, to master nature?
Yeah, we said, v'yirduvid gasayam, that one of man's jobs is to master nature, to get control over nature. Now, obviously, there are different jobs in this world, and a Jew's job is to learn Torah. But one of the jobs of mankind is to master nature. That's why a lot of people say that's another sign that we're coming closer to Yimos HaMashiach, because we're mastering nature even more. But you know what? They said that 100 years ago and 200 years ago. I mean, they could have said that, even though technological advances of the last 100 years are much more. Okay. What's the time?
42.
Okay. So we have to end soon. Any questions still here? And is there anything that people want we should expand on? Okay. Just a second.
Who was Adam?
Huh?
Who was Adam? Where was Adam when
I don't know.
I thought he was something else. No, I thought he was naming it all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When Adam is created, so he's given seven commandments: not to serve Avodah Zarah, not to have relations with one of the six arayos, his mother, any woman that his father had married, and what?
Is that coming?
Bigotry.
I don't know. He's not allowed to kill. He's not allowed to steal. He's not allowed to curse God's name. We call that Birchas Hashem. That's the term Lashon Saginar. He's supposed to appoint judges and policemen. And he's not allowed to eat Ever Minachai. The Indians used to do that. When they were riding, they'd hack a piece of the horse and eat it. That would get the horse to run quicker, and then they'd also get fresh meat.
It's also good when you don't have a fridge.
What?
Yeah. Meat doesn't go bad.
Okay, but you don't
the
have to have... Okay.
The meat doesn't.
Okay. I think we'll stop here.
Well, I'm going to have another note to end on now, but...
End on something better.
Okay, you want to end on something better.
A good story.
A good story.